So if you got a little bit of extra kicking around, www.patreon.com/thebreakdownab. All of that being said, we've got Tammy, who's sitting in the queue, and I'm looking forward. Tammy is one of our regulars, and I am looking forward to seeing what she's got to say tonight. So, Tammy, how are you doing?
Oh, not too bad.
Good, good. What's going on?
So, for me, I'm Wiccan. So, for me, the March holiday is Ostara, and it happened on March 20th. So, our family, this is... Easter is called Easter Bunny Day. It's we go and we get chocolate Easter eggs and we eat Easter eggs, but it has nothing to do with the Christian Easter. We just like chocolate Easter bunnies because we've already done our Ostara thing. And I could totally go and rant on about how Christianity basically stole all of the old religion holidays and made, because people would celebrate on those days. So rather than getting people to actually switch to their religion, they just made their normal holidays match the Christian holidays.
Yep.
So, you know... Yeah. But that isn't the main thing that I want to chat about. So we're talking about folks that are trans. And I have, and specifically kids. But I'm going to talk to about an older friend of mine. Not, I'm older than her, but she's definitely not a kid. So this idea that, oh, well, they have to wait and they have to go to parents. And they have to do that. It doesn't work.
Yeah.
It literally, Blaine, I can see you in the chat. It doesn't work. This is why. My friend, who is trans, she's actually, she identifies as both male and female.
Okay, so non-binary.
Calls herself a they. And she accepts that I am dumb and I have a real hard time switching the pronouns. So she says, it's just Tammy. Some of it is the stroke. It's hard to do. But I try. And she recognizes that I try. But her family, first, they were married to a man. And that went down extremely poorly for her. There's abuse going on. There's lots of things going on. And so she divorced him. Then she thought, well, I must be gay. And she hooked up with a girl. And again, it didn't go well. Because she wasn't gay. She's somewhere in between. And now she's finally gotten into being who she really is. Being who they really are. But their family, their mother gets it. And is kind of the same as me, trying to use the right pronouns and stuff. Their dad and their brothers, this is an adult woman. They live in the States, so money isn't great there amongst all of them. So they share a house. And it's still a problem for they. Like, their mom is okay with it, but their dad and their brother isn't.
And that happens. I mean, like, I go back to the, sorry to jump in, but I go back to the conversation that we had with Marnie Panis about, you know, there's I think that there's a reality that exists for a lot of trans folks, and I can't speak with this empirically, but there's a lot of people who transition later in life, and it's because they haven't been in environments where that language or that terminology is available to them. And to be able to know these are the things that are possibilities. These are the things that are out there. So they end up transitioning much later. But I also go to, you know, Marnie's story about how when she came out to her family, to her parents, I'm working from memory here, but I'm pretty sure that that was the last time that she spoke to them because they won't have anything to do with her. And that is a reality that exists. And the statistics bear that out.
And their dad and their brother is still waiting for them to just get over it. That's literally what the males in their family think are going to happen. They'll get over it. Just had a bad experience with that first husband. They'll get over it. No, they won't.
It's who they are. And that's my fundamental beef with this event and the conversations that have been going on in the province, is that there's this underlying assumption that exists that says, maybe they'll just get over it. Maybe if the parents intervene at an early age, or I don't care what the scenario is, maybe somehow that will be the thing that makes them not be who and what they are. And that's just traumatizing. And to not condemn that, to me, is a complete and total failure of responsibility.
And the idea is that these are kids. One of the things my friend said is, geez, I wish I had known about all of this when I was younger. I wouldn't have had two horrible relationships that still leaves her with trauma. From those relationships, maybe she could have they could have avoided that.
Yeah.
Maybe. And it's not 100%, but...
Nothing is.
Nothing is. But the fact of the matter is, they do have trauma from those relationships because they were entered into without understanding themselves.
Here's the bottom line, and this is something that's been said to me, and I think that it sums it up really, really well. Being trans is only bad if you think that being trans is bad.
Exactly. Exactly. The funny thing is I have my youngest daughter is, she's ace, so she has no strong attraction, male or female. She just, And one of the things that she says is, I'm so glad. She goes, I don't have to worry about whether I like a boy or a girl. I just am. She says, I don't even think about if I'm a boy or a girl. I just do my things. And I don't think about it. She goes, and when guys think I'm hot because she's good looking, she's like, that's nice. Doesn't really do much for her, but that's nice. You can enjoy looking at me. It's all good. But she says it just takes out all of that, that thing the rest of us that has hormones that are attracted to boys and girls and, you know, does the thing. It takes that hyper fixation on sex.
Oh, I love the way that, I mean, the way that you're describing her is just sounds like pure confidence. So that's pretty awesome.
She, let's put it this way. When she was in junior high, the guys used to bug some of her girlfriends, some of her buddies. And she would lean in, and we had called her Lecter spawn, as in Hannibal Lecter, because she's always been kind of very dark and she looks at people and you're like, I don't know if she's going to kill me or what. She's just one of these kids. You can't read her. She's just very dark. And so this guy was bugging one of her friends and she leaned in and she had a fork because it was lunchtime. And she puts the fork on the table and leans into him and says, you know, if you don't stop annoying my friend, I'm going to find a pencil and put it, I'm not going to say where she was going to put it. And the way she just delivered it completely deadpan, the guy just got up, backed off, and left.
That's awesome.
She was known as the person you did not tick off.
There you go.
And I doubt she would have actually done anything, but she totally could just deliver that, just such emphasis and just the right, that they just go, no, I'm out. But, but she's like, she's okay with people being attracted to her. It's just, she's just not interested most of the time. Unless she's attracted to them, I can't remember exactly what they call. It's based on the person when you're ace, not their gender. It's about how you get to know them and that's when you become attracted to the person, after you've gotten to know them and they become interesting to you as a person rather than as a ooh hot boy or ooh hot girl. That's the type of ace that she is.
Very cool.
And to me, that's awesome, because it means it takes away from that idea of just being attracted via looks.
Good for her. Anything else you wanted to add there, Tammy?
Nope, that was it.
All right. Well, thanks for tapping in. I'm going to bring in one of our other regulars, Cassandra, and we'll see what Cassandra has to say next.
Hello.
How's it going?
Oh, it's going. I seem to have caught myself shingles.
Oh.
Yeah,
you've
started with
luck.
Pain in my leg, and then, like, I thought I slept the wrong way. I didn't know what was going on. I had the worst case of sciatica, and then I started breaking out in a very painful rash and shooting. Yeah, anyway. So, but other than that, that's not what I came here to talk about. I have a bad habit of when people ask me how I'm doing, I actually tell them.
That's okay.
No, I'll tell you, there's so much I could say about this episode. But I would like to talk about this warehousing of homeless people. Mm-hmm. You know, this is a topic I care deeply about, as well as, I mean, I often build myself as mostly a disability advocate, but unfortunately, disability and homelessness, you know, they go hand in hand. You're at a much higher risk of homelessness if you're a person with disabilities, and that's just the way it is. But, you know, it disturbs me. I mean, I worked in foster homes doing respite work in Vancouver, and one of my bosses is actually from Alberta. And he used to talk to me often about one of the things he didn't like about the Alberta system at the time was they just warehoused the kids. Like, they had these big homes, they put them in, and they just warehoused them. And often the kids weren't prepared to go out in the world once they aged out of care, and which leads to homelessness. And this is, again, what they're doing with the homeless population. Like, these centers aren't housing anybody. You know what I mean? They're just wasting a lot of money. An example is, doing it in Calgary is ridiculous. In Calgary, we got a place called Source. And if you're a person that is homeless or at risk of being homeless, you can go to Source. And that's been here for, that's been around for over a decade, Source has. And it's just all the different, it's just all the different agencies that are out there together in one space so somebody can just walk in and say, hey, I'm at risk of homelessness, or I am homeless, I don't know what to do. And then they try to coordinate resources. And it's been pretty good, but I think they've been probably overwhelmed in recent times. And there's difficulties. So them saying they're going to do this thing they've done in Edmonton and Calgary is actually pretty ridiculous. They could just fund the one that already is here and that has proven to be way more effective than what they did in Edmonton. That would seem to me like a better course of action than trying to duplicate what they did in Edmonton here. You know, the fact is you can't house people if you don't have houses to put them in. Our problem is that we do not have house. Well, actually, I should qualify that. We do not have housing that people, marginalized people, can afford to live in. I cannot get an accessible apartment because to get an accessible apartment right now, a one bedroom, I'm looking at $1,700 to $2,200 a month.
Wow.
That's, yeah. That's just for my accessibility needs. And I, you know, like I don't have the same level of accessibility needs as somebody in a wheelchair. You know, and so like Jason Nixon just pisses me off. When I called his office, and all I can say about that person is like how they talked to me was some real sociopathic, psychopathic shit. I wasn't telling them about stats. I was relaying my story, what was happening to me step by step as I was trying to access all these different resources and what I was being met with. And this psychopath on the other end, without emotion, is telling me that I was lying to her, right? Oh, that's a lie. That's not true. There's plenty of rooms in the shelters. There wasn't. I'm a woman. I don't have any children, and I wasn't fleeing abuse. So that really narrows my options down to maybe there's some co-ed spaces, but those aren't safe. And even as such, I was going to agencies and they were outright telling me, we don't know what we can do for you. And I had multiple agencies, and what would happen is I would be referred in circles there because they're all dealing with the same pot of resources. And they refer you back and forth to each other, but they're all still dealing with the same pot of resources. So it's this exercise in futility. But Jason Nixon would have you to believe something else. And he has somebody in his office that will gaslight you if you try to call in and get help and tell you that your experience isn't really happening. So already we've got a problem. My dad had an expression, if the top isn't right, then nothing else is. And that is the case. The person in charge of community and social services is the last person on earth that should be allowed to have a ministry, be in charge of a ministry that deals with human lives, because he has no empathy. He has no compassion. This is a person that we all know about him being charged with the horse killing and the trespassing and assault of the property owner, who happened to be a woman. In both cases, he didn't fight those charges, and he has the money to do it. He didn't even fight them. He just pled guilty. You know, and this is who we have looking after community and social services, making these horrible decisions, telling us that what we're experiencing and what's happening out there isn't really happening. It's somehow all our imaginations. Well, he does absolutely nothing and tells about money they're supposedly throwing at housing that's going to be built in 2 or 3 years when we have a housing emergency right now. And the fact that they're sitting there saying, oh, well, they've only housed 4 people out of all these referrals. That doesn't surprise me, because in order to house people, you have to have housing available to give them. And there isn't any.
Yeah.
And it just drives me absolutely batty. The other thing, that's my housing rant for the night. you know, I was just, it's funny, like when I'm listening, when I was listening to that, the whole trans thing, it drives me nuts. Like I grew up in a neighborhood that, I mean, the LGBTQ thing wasn't actually in our faces. But you knew well enough hanging out with your friends that, you know, if you were from the LGBT community in any way, you didn't want to let them know about it, let alone your parents or anybody else's parents. And I know kids that went through hell because they couldn't come out to their friends or their family members. Mm. I know people that self-mutilated because their bodies did not seem and they had nobody to turn to. And I know kids that were beaten and kicked out of their home because they could not come out to their parents. And so this whole idea that I totally believe, like my daughter, I have the kind of relationship with my daughter. My daughter told me things that even while she was telling me, I'm like, I'm not sure. I'm glad you're telling me, but at the same time, it's not what I want. I don't want to hear this because la, 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 you're my daughter, you know, but she knew it was a safe place that she could come to me and I wasn't going to push anything on her. I was going to set out the facts and help her make an educated decision and support her through that. So she knew it was safe. Not every kid has that, and more than we realize. Like, we like to say it's the tip of the iceberg, but and I do believe most parents are good, especially in this day and age. But it wasn't that long ago where that it would have been, your statistic on the 1/3 versus 2/3 would have been the reverse.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't that long ago. And so to hear people trying to portray this, like people are trying to somehow groom your children when all they're trying to do is give a safe place for kids to figure out who they are. When you go through puberty, you have all sorts of feelings that you're trying to sort out. Even if you're a cis person, you still have a whole lot of feelings that you're trying to figure out at puberty, and it is very difficult. And if you don't have an adult or a parent that you can go to, you need to have somebody else. You need to have a safe space, right? Because if you don't, the results are tragic, and it just mortifies me that these people continue to... And that guy running the whole show at that thing, honestly, he's a disgusting human as far as I'm concerned. Like, I don't even know what to say. But anyway, that's my speech,
no, thank
I guess,
you.
For tonight.
I hope you feel better soon. I do want to say, because you gave me a point to kind of hop off of, and I didn't address this earlier. Even the language that's being used is bad. As I go to eloquent, and when I say that, I'm speaking particularly about the term, the use of the term grooming. So let's be clear.
Yeah.
When we're talking about grooming, what we're talking about is a sexual predator who is,
yep,
over an extended period of time trying to create an environment and trying to reinforce behaviors that make that the subject, the object of their target, vulnerable to sexual assault. So when you talk about grooming, that's what you're talking about. And when you have,
yep,
people who use that term to say, I don't know, whatever the fuck they want, what that results in is diminishing that term, and it diminishes the reality of...
Yeah, you're watering down the reality of very real things. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry.
So, no, I agree. Thank you so much, Cassandra. I'm going to bring in Progressive Albertan, I think, is. I can never read the whole thing, so I'm going to bring them in, and then I'm going to open it up if anybody else wants to raise their hand, and we'll go from there. So Progressive Albertan, what's going on?
Hi. So I think I'll get started with Raki Pancholi. She endorsed Nenshi.
That's, she sure, big, did.
I'm a little saddened. I'm a little saddened she endorsed Nenshi, because all candidates have brought good ideas to the table. And it's sad to see that there's going to be less ideas being brought to the table at a time when there needs to be as many ideas as possible needed to be brought to the table.
I think she's going to keep bringing her ideas to the table, though. Like, I don't think I would not count Rocky or her team out of the policy and idea realm. I think that one of the things that would have had to exist in order for Rocky to A, endorse Nenshi, and B, become his executive chair, there had to be a conversation about, and I'm gonna come to the table so that I can be at the table.
I see that point. But there's also, like, she can still create ideas with Nenshi, but having individual ideas and then coming all together and then discussing those individual ideas, I think will create a better NDP for the Albert NDP in particularly. And what's the second thing? It's been a while.
It's a 3-hour show. We're doing a Lord of the Rings show again, so I can understand why you might lose the thread a little bit.
Yeah. The PharmaCare. That's a big thing. Danielle Smith basically said, screw the PharmaCare, even though, if I remember correctly, I don't think there's many, like, open options to the public outside of, like, maybe a small group of people for coverage from the government, if I remember correctly.
There is a Blue Cross program that you can sign up with through the government of Alberta. It is not free. There is a monthly premium. There are deductibles anytime you use a service. So there are a lot of barriers to entry, and it's certainly not comparable to the free program that the feds are trying to offer.
Yeah, that's one of the programs maybe Smith was trying to, like, talk about, but, like, outside of that, there's not really much in Alberta and for any drug coverage, and for contraceptives and diabetic medicine is something that it covers a wide range of Albertans right now.
Yep.
And it could have covered a wide range of Albertans. I think Quebec also opted out of the plan, but if I remember correctly, they have their own sort of plan system. So, you know, you can see them opting out so they can enhance their own plan.
Yeah, they do. They have a mandatory program that exists for anybody who stays in Quebec for, I want to say it's more than 6 months, but I could be wrong because I'm working from memory there. But there is a mandatory coverage plan that exists for the Quebecers, the Quebecois. So,
yeah. So, what else is there to touch on? Your interviews, they were pretty good. I had a look at them. I liked the Mr. Lukaszek's, I like Mr. Lukaszek's overview of what the leaders do and how he views what the Alberta NDP is looking towards. I like how he put forward what he thinks, I can't remember the words. Sorry.
That's all good. Thomas is Mr. the Honorable, I suppose. Mr. Yes. Lukaszek is he's a fantastic speaker, but, you know, he's a former deputy premier. He's a former minister of, like, 6 or 12 or 50 things. And so that's one of the things that I like about him.
Yeah. And I think another thing is with Pancholi endorsing Nenshi, could we see maybe other centrist candidates go for Nenshi? I think Mr. Gil McGowan, I think he called Nenshi, if he wins, he'll turn the party into a progressive conservative party 2.0, which is, I don't think that's true, but, you know, all ideas are good, no matter if you think they're bad or good, they're still good to discuss.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. I think that I like brainstorming. I know that when we've written some of the sketches for the show, we do a very much a brainstorming approach with the team. And it is very much, okay, let's just throw everything into the middle of the room and then we'll pick through and find the good stuff. I think that where one of the problems that exists, sticking with the theme of sort of tonight's show, one of the problems that exists where we go, well, no, everybody's ideas are valid and should be respected. And no. if it's a bad idea and you can demonstrate that it's a bad idea, then it's a bad idea. I do hope that we're able to get Mr. McGowan on the show. I would love to have the full set.
Yes, that'd be good.
Anything else you want to throw in there, man? I got one more speaker for the night, and then we're going to wrap it up.
Yeah, I think one more thing I'll add is about polling with the leaders. I think what I've seen with recent polling in Alberta with each of the leaders is, you know, one leader or one of the leaders can't seem to satisfy both Calgary and Edmonton, which are the key cities needed for an NDP victory. I think some of the polls I've seen is with Nenshi as leader, they might dissatisfy some Edmonton voters, and with Hoffman as leader, it's going to dissatisfy a lot of Calgary voters. So I think there's something the NDP needs to work on is satisfying both Calgary and Edmonton, and maybe as a bonus, parts of rural Alberta, because the NDP without a leader, they're looking pretty hopeless right now, which is a little bit sad to say.
This is one of the reasons why I think the Rocky Pancholi move is so interesting and so significant, because, you know, there's no question. I mean, I think that the NDP did a good job. And I criticize the NDP all the time, but I think the NDP did a good job of timing their leadership race, because they've got 2.5-3 years by the time this thing's done to introduce the new leader to all of the areas. But with the Nenshi Pancholi thing, he's, you know, there's a lot of people, there's the vocal minority in Calgary. He's like, oh, I hate Nenshi so much, but they are a vocal minority. He was a 3-term mayor. And clearly the membership purchases speak to the enthusiasm that exists for him. But Pancholi also has a lot of leverage in Edmonton. She's very, very good at interacting with the high profile popular MLAs in Edmonton. So I think they've got a foundation that is going to be very, very interesting if Nenshi's successful in the leadership race.
Yeah, because I think what I've heard is like, from some people, it's like, oh, Nenshi as leader, the Edmontonians won't vote for a Calgarian as leader, and vice versa. Oh, a Calgarian as leader will as Edmontonian as leader. Oh, somebody from like the left wing Edmonton NDP, will Calgarians vote for them or whatever? Which is a bit interesting to look at, but I guess we'll have to see after the leadership race if the polling for NDP rebounds back to what it was in maybe the 2023 general election.
I think it probably will. And I mean, if there was one thing that I would say to the NDP over the next 3 years is leave the shit posting to folks like us, because that was one of the biggest criticisms in the election. And if they, you know, there's I look at accounts like Disordered YYC. I wish I could buy whoever runs that account, at the very least, a coffee, if not a delightful piece of pie, because those are the accounts that do such a good job of going through and finding all of the things. And I think that if the NDP runs a positive campaign, then the next election will be interesting to watch. But thanks for your thoughts tonight, man.
No problem.
All right, I'm going to bring in our last speaker. She's already here. So I'm just going to ask her to unmute herself.
Hey, Nate, how are you?
It's been a long show, Anna. I don't know how I'm doing over here.
Well, you know, we're so thankful that you do these shows. Oh, at least I am, anyways.
Thank you. How are you doing tonight? Can I do a little introduction just for context? Because I want to make sure people know who Anna is. Is that okay?
Sure.
Okay.
Why not? I'm always interested to hear other people's thoughts on.
I first was introduced to Anna Murphy way back in the run-up to the 2021 municipal election. I want to say it was 2020 that we first met. Anna is a politico. She is unbelievably smart when it comes to policy. And she is a tremendous advocate. She's also trans. She doesn't just say she's trans. I'm sorry, I had to make that joke.
correct.
Yeah. No, Anna is trans. How's it going? Today's International Trans Day of Visibility.
It is International and it's, Trans Day.
It's been a bit of a show. So I'm just like, what are your thoughts? What's going on?
It has been a little bit of a show. And, you know, I've been listening to bits and pieces of it. And obviously, you know, today is, apologies, excuse me. And obviously today is, it's an important day for so many reasons, but especially here within Alberta, and Canada, today holds even more particular meaning because of the misguided policies and guidelines that we saw proposed by Premier Smith, a few weeks ago here. And so, you know, just touching, I think, first on, you know, the importance of Transgender Day of visibility. And, you know, we have two specific dates on the calendar that we take a moment to recognize throughout the year. One is Transgender Day of Visibility, and the other one is Transgender Day of Remembrance. And if you think of it, you know, if we do a really good job of not only recognizing Transgender Day of Visibility, hopefully we can get to a point where we don't need Transgender Day of Remembrance. But sadly, you know, for folks like the current premier and members of her caucus and government, you know, they seem pretty intent on doing what arguably it would be described as performative. Obviously, we know that these policies and guidelines have been proposed. We know that, you know, there is a rollout. How they're going to be rolled out or delayed is basically an albatross around the neck of transgender, two-spirit, non-binary, gender diverse Albertans. And what we saw from the Minister of Arts and Culture today was a post basically making a commitment to stand with transgender, two-spirit, non-binary, and gender diverse Albertans and, you know, the need to combat transphobia, which, if you think about it, is rather ironic considering the fact that one of the biggest perpetrators of transphobia in the province of Alberta right now is the government that, you know, she represents. So I think it's great that, you know, anyone would come out and recognize the importance of Transgender Day of Visibility and make such a very public commitment to stand with the community. However, when that person is someone who is an honorable member of the Legislative Assembly, a minister that has power and ability and sits at the cabinet table, I would perhaps maybe say that, you know, today is a day to go beyond words and maybe put those words into action. Maybe, you know, publicly condemn the proposed policies and guidelines, publicly condemn some of the comments that have been made by your colleagues, your backbench colleagues in the legislature. Perhaps maybe start there and then maybe let's go on to the post, you know, post about, you know, your commitment and all of that. So, you know, Transgender Day of Visibility is incredibly important. And, you know, it's an opportunity to celebrate the existence of our transgender neighbors. And, you know, you started off my introduction by saying I am transgender. Yes, I am transgender. It's not something I hide. It's not something that, you know, for lack of a better term at this hour, Nate, I'll say pussyfoot around. Also being from rural Alberta, I feel like that's true to who I am.
Yeah.
It's not something I pussyfoot around. I am transgender. But first and foremost, you know, I am a woman. And it's possible, much like you can have two significant occasions happening on the same date, i.e. Transgender Day of Visibility and Easter, a person can also be two things simultaneously at the same time. I can be a woman. I can be someone who's transgender. I can be someone who was born and raised and very much in tune with my rural roots, as much as someone who is a very proud, fiercely proud, some might say, Calgarian, who loves the urban vibrancy that is the biggest city in Western Canada. So it's this whole thing that, you know, the world's not black and white. But you're right, I am transgender. And having been transgender, listening to some of the comments around, you know, not even just on this show, but, you know, we often hear, you know, from folks, oh, well, you know, there wasn't as much transgender people, you know, in my time. This seems to be a new thing. I think you were talking about it, you know, it seems to be a trend. It seems to be the cool thing that kids are wanting to do. You're 100% right. There's nothing cool about this. You know, it's not something that someone wakes up and decides, hey, you know, this is going to get me popularity. This is going to get me fame. This is going to, you know, get me farther ahead in life. In fact, we know within Canada, you know, up to 40% of youth who are experiencing houselessness within this country are 2SLGBTQIA+. We know that transgender individuals within this country are 5 times more likely to attempt suicide. So if this was the cool thing to do, if this was the trendy thing to do, you would not be seeing statistics such as those. But furthermore to that, the reason, you know, why, you know, this argument that we see some make about, oh my gosh, you know, this is, you know, that this is a fad, or, you know, this is taking off like wildfire. It has to do with the reality that as a society, we have moved forward. We have done the hard work to bring progress forward. We have the people before me who were at, you know, moments such as the Stonewall riots, which launched the 2SLGBTQIA+ civil rights movement, all the way through to, you know, the marriage equality, all the way through to, you know, blood ban and Bill C-16 federally, and changing, you know, the gender markers in 2016 under the Notley government here in Alberta. All of that was not a snap your fingers, here we are, it happened. That was a lot of hard won progress for vulnerable individuals. And let's be quite clear, the work isn't done. In fact, we've barely got this progress, okay? We've barely made this progress. And already we see it being put to the test like never before. I can't recall, and granted, you know, I'm not as old as the hills, but I don't think many of us can recall a time where human rights have been at such risk for one group of individuals in very recent memory. Of course, there are historical, you know, examples that we can look to, but I'm talking recent. I'm talking like within the last, you know, 20, 30 years, not farther. And so we've just brought forward this progress. We've just done so much work to build neighborhoods that are safe and welcoming and affirming, recognizing that by doing so for one group of vulnerable neighbors, it doesn't mean it's just for them. By doing the hard work to build neighborhoods that are safe, welcoming, and affirming, it does it for everybody. When we talk about human rights, you know, we've all heard the saying, it's not pie. It's not like, oh, you know, we gave some human rights to the transgender individuals, so that means we're going to have to take some from this group or a little from that group. That's not how human rights works. By protecting and defending and being champions of human rights, it means for every single solitary individual in our neighborhoods who are vulnerable, who experience not just marginalization, but quite frankly, get pushed to the margins of marginalization. So we've done some of that work, okay? We've done that, some of that heavy, heavy, heavy lifting, and been there and made it happen. And that has led to the youth of today, and even people who aren't youth, who maybe went through their life not feeling safe and welcome and affirmed in wherever they were in their life, to look around them and go, okay, I think I can do this. I think I can muster the courage and the resilience. I already have developed the resilience because I've been dealing with who I am in secret. So now I'm looking at the world around me, and it looks like I can actually have the courage to come out, as we've all heard, coming out stories, and I can do so. And there's a place for me. That's what we've told people, is that there's a place for them. There's a place for them in Calgary. There's a place for them in Alberta. There's a place for them in Canada. Now we're seeing that narrative shift drastically and dramatically because, quite frankly, I would argue that there are some who are feeling threatened by that. There are some individuals who feel that their privilege is somehow shrinking and they want to do everything they can to hold on to it. And, you know, I think the other, you know, thing you mentioned tonight, the other group that keeps coming up, which quite frankly, I am so fucking tired of this group of individuals, honest to God, but it's Take Back Alberta. Let's be very clear, folks. The premier of Alberta is taking marching orders from a group of individuals that is not elected. They do not go into the legislature. They're not even staff of the legislative assembly. And that is who our elected officials are basically taking their marching orders from. And again, can't recall a time in history. You know, we like to talk, or especially, you know, some of my friends on the more conservative side like to talk about the glory days, right? We like to talk about, you know, the Peter Lougheeds and the Ralph Klines and, you know, these great statesmen, Brian Mulroney, who, you know, just passed, you know, God rest his soul, all these people, right? All these great statesmen. We're in a position where that doesn't exist anymore. You can't have great statesmen when the people that you're supporting aren't even actually the ones that are making the decisions, but rather it's a third, it's a group of individuals that is in the shadows. It is so ridiculous right now. It is so ridiculous. So anyways, it's a little bit of a tangent and a little bit of a rant and a little bit of a divergence to this, but it's very clear to understand what is currently going on and how these policies and guidelines, which let's be quite clear, are misguided. They are based in fallacious ideology. It is weaponized misinformation. And that's not me, Anna, the transgender person, the woke lefty, the progressive, whatever one wants to paint me. That is groups of medical professionals. That is groups of psychologists, doctors, lawyers, human rights experts, people who are far more intelligent and smarter than I am. And I'm not just saying, you know, 5 or 10. We're talking about hundreds and hundreds of individuals, professionals who have stood up, looked at these policies and guidelines and said, this is factually false. This is false what you are doing. But more so to that, besides the professionals, it's the everyday individuals. It's the young person that the day after these policies and guidelines were announced, they weren't in school the next day because they attempted to do a permanent action to what I sincerely hope is a temporary problem. It's the family member who tragically took their life, which we heard you had Dr. Keegan on this show, Nate.
Yep.
It is those individuals that are being directly impacted by these policies and guidelines. These have real life consequences. So we've done all this work to build these safe and affirming communities and to bring this progress forward, to create a Alberta, a Canada, you know, that folks look out and they go, that's where I want to go. That's where I want to create my home because they're so welcoming. They're so friendly. They say sorry all the time. Well, unfortunately, it's a bit naive, right? It's like, because that's how we've got to this place. We kind of have this false sense of security. It's Canada. This can't happen here. It can happen in the States. It can happen in the UK. It can't happen in Canada. I've got bad news for everybody. It is happening. It is happening now, which is why it is so important that we recognize that on Transgender Day of Visibility, it's not just a day to make a post like what we saw the Minister of Arts and Culture do. Thank you for making a post. Quite frankly, I don't need your post. What I need you to do is, not this Tuesday, because the House is currently on constituency break, but come Monday, a week from now, walk into the Legislative Assembly at 1:30 p.m. and stand up and give a ministerial statement and call on your boss. And when you do this, you're going to lose your role as minister. You're going to lose the position you have. But you know what? You're going to do something better. Something that, we talk about this great statesman, this moral courage, all of these different things, which quite frankly is lacking significantly in politics right now. You would do something. You would actually make your job that you have worth a goddamn thing. You would actually do something with it beyond just putting out a tweet or raising a flag when you have policies and guidelines that are costing people their lives. And the last thing, really quickly, Nate, I would just say, you know, in terms of, you know, as I said, you know, when you started the introduction, I always love hearing what people have to say about me, because I've been called groomer. I've been called a pedophile. I've been called, you know, a pervert, whatever it is. It's no different than back in the 80s and 70s, again, through the AIDS crisis, of how gay men were demonized and dehumanized as individuals. They were deemed to be the problem. We see this with groups throughout history that are othered or are perceived to be the problem. Gay men throughout the AIDS crisis, Jewish people throughout the Holocaust, as well as communists and gays and homosexuals and transgender people, and basically anyone who is not the standard of the group that is out there wanting to, that has the power, right? So in this case, bad news for everybody, the group that has the power at the moment is a group of cisgendered, heterosexual, white, Christian men. So if you are not a part of that group, okay, if you are not a part of that group, you will never be a part of that group. You will at times have value to that group to justify a means to their end, okay? And we've seen that also throughout history and throughout various different moments where groups will go and they will use and they will take. This is not a give and take relationship that we're in right now. This is a take relationship. They want to do anything they can to justify, right? And so that's what we've done. And so you hear people be called groomers. And again, this weaponized misinformation, fallacious ideology. Let's be very clear. The most important thing in the life of any child, transgender or otherwise, is a loving and supportive parent, family, friend, caregiver. Okay? Nobody is disputing that. I am not disputing that. But what we know is that sadly, again, I take you back to the stat that I gave. Up to 40% of youth who experience houselessness in Canada, across Canada, are 2SLGBTQIA+. Who kicked them out of their home? It wasn't me. It wasn't the government. It wasn't the teachers. It was parents. It was parents who, when that child found the courage to come out, was met with a parent that didn't want them and got rid of them. And that's sad and that's unfortunate, which is why it's so important that we have neighborhoods and a community that can rally around that child, okay? And so, you know, we're not grooming people. You can't force somebody, you know, again, to continue on and, you know, beat this, you know, rural analogy moment into the ground. You can't drag a horse to water and force it to drink, okay? This is something that people know. People know deep down in their heart and soul of who they are, and they know from a very early and young age. So the idea that anybody is forcing anyone to be transgender is fundamentally false. Or this idea that we need to protect the rights of parents. It's the children that have rights. It is the children that we need to protect, okay, and defend. Parents have responsibilities. So if you are, you know, if there is someone out there that's like, well, you know, I don't want my kid to do, you know, X, Y, and Z. And if they did, well, that is why your kid would not tell you what is going on. You very publicly have demonstrated that. And if they do, or if they did come out to you, then they would probably be met with a really sad and unfortunate situation. And so it's, again, today is Transgender Day of Visibility, and we have 365 some odd days until we're here again. And hopefully we can look back and think, you know what? We didn't stop. We didn't stop at midnight on, you know, on the next day. We carried on. We carried on standing up, speaking out, using whatever little bit of platform we have, if no other way than just, you know, starting by using affirming pronouns, or, you know, seeing someone in our circle and just letting them know that they are seen, they are valued, and they are loved. Because Nate, right now, myself included, we're scared. Transgender folks, we're scared, we're tired, and we're looking around and we're going, holy shit, right? Where does it stop? Where does it end? Because I go back to the example. We just got done working hard to get the progress that is now trying to be systematically stripped away and dismantled from us. And for anyone that says that will never happen, it is happening. So thanks, Nate. Rant over.
Thank you, Anna. I got to say, that was a fantastic rant. There's only one thing in there that you said that I take any kind of umbrage with. It's Z, not Z. I'm sorry. I have to point that out.
Did I say Z?
You said XYZ. No. But here's the thing, and I wanted to end things on a slightly positive-ish note. You know, I know that you're familiar with Dr. Christopher Wells. He's been curating a list of organizations that have come out against Smith's policies. So I just want to list off a few, and then I want to talk about the letter that was released. I think it was today. So if you are someone who's going, oh, you know, maybe there's something in Smith's policies that makes sense. Here's the people who say, I mean, some of the organizations who say no. We're talking about the Alberta Human Rights Commission. We're talking about the Canadian Civil Liberties Association. We're talking about the Canadian Human Rights Commission. We're talking about the University of Calgary and University of Alberta law faculties. We're talking about the Canadian Pediatric Society. We're talking about the Canadian Psychological Association. We're talking about the Children's Healthcare and the Pediatric Chairs of Canada. We're talking about the Canadian Medical Association. We're talking about medical associations across the country released by the Canadian Medical Association. We're talking about the Alberta Medical Association, the Alberta Medical Association Pediatrics Section, Alberta Psychiatric Association. I'm only on page 9 of 46. And the point that I'm going with this piece is that I'm only on page 9. And if you can look at the collective expertise, the collective knowledge, the collective, I mean, these are the organizations that specialize in what they do. If you can look at even that partial small list that I read off and go, yeah, but I think maybe I know better, you need to give your head a shake, is all I'm saying. The other thing that I wanted to highlight really quick as well as a positive thing is the letter that was released by, I struggle with this. I really do struggle with this. And I struggle with this because I saw these two when they played, and it was like a battle of the bands, and they played a stage at Mount Royal. And it was just when they were really starting to break. And they used to go by Sarah and Tegan, and that's what's embedded in my head. And then they switched it, and now I get it wrong all the time. Tegan and Sarah released a letter that specifically targeted the trans legislation that has been brought forward and the policies that have been proposed by Danielle Smith. And there's a lot of amazing artists who have co-signed on this. The surviving two members of Sharon Lois and Bram are calling Alberta out on this. Fred Penner is calling Alberta out on this. Neil Young, Katie Lang, Alanis Morissette. You could go on and on and on and on and on. And these people are not necessarily experts on the field of gender identity, gender incongruency. But what they're demonstrating is that they're willing to exercise some compassion and listen to the experts and the evidence. And that is all that I think anybody is asking. Exercise some compassion, listen to the evidence. And when you run into the fear mongers who are using the language of fear and the weapons of fear to try to further themselves, call them out. And if you're somebody who's not a direct target of these things, like Anna, as you were saying there, you know, the group that is the main group are the cisgendered white middle-aged Christian men, and I fill almost all of those ticky boxes. I'm a lapsed Anglican, so I don't know if that counts or not. But if you're in those groups that have privilege, and this is, I hope, partially what we accomplished tonight, part of your job, I think, is to do some of the fighting so that the people who are the targets don't have to always. It's not that hard. So, and I'm going to make the assumption that given that Anna didn't say, Nate, you shit the bed in a spectacular way tonight, that I didn't. But I'm open to the correction on that. And that's it. We're another 3-hour show. I'm going to break this up into two parts because asking anyone to sit through 3 hours is a whole awful lot. I want to say a big thank you to all of the speakers tonight on the Twitter Spaces or the X Spaces. I want to say particular thanks to Anna for that. I wouldn't call that a rant. That was just eloquent and passionate and good. So I want to say a big thank you to Anna for taking the time on this very important day for so many different reasons, for so many different people to share a little bit of time and speak so very well to those things. I want to thank you to everybody who's watching on the Facebooks, the YouTubes, the Instagrams, the things. We're on all the places now. And if you're listening to the audio version of the podcast, thank you for listening to both parts. And leave a rating and a review, because if I've learned anything, it's that anytime we do one of these shows, the lists and the bots show up. So I'm sure our block list will double by the end of the week. Thank you, everybody, so much for taking the time to listen. And honestly, if there's anything that we've said here tonight that you disagree with or that you found to be inaccurate, our DMs are always open and we'd love to hear from you, because as I've said throughout the episode tonight, we try to get things right more than we get things wrong. So if you find something that we can get wrong and we can back it up, then we'd absolutely love to hear from you. Watch for the episode with disability advocate Dawn Slater coming later this week. And we will be back next Sunday. I mean, it's constituency week, so that probably means like a whole lot of PR crap. So we'll probably have a lot of clips to play next week. But we'll be back next Sunday for another live episode. Look forward to seeing you then. Until then, keep the conversation going. Thank you.